A Misfortune at Seaham by Graham Fife. Set in Seaham, County Durham, this is the story of one of the worst colliery disasters in British mining history, and of the extraordinary heroism shown by the trapped and the rescuers.
Climb into an open cage. The big wheel turns, the winding gear lowers the cage, crammed full of humanity. From the bank, the surface, down the shaft of the network of tunnels in by. You go in total dark, rarely talking into that other world, underground. From the cage you pass along the roadways to the faces where the hewers win the coal. Lying on their side, kneeling however they can wield the pick. And you can use six or more picks a shift and sharp the points yourself in your free time. Other men shovel the loose coal into a long train of tubs hauled by ponies away to the upshaft, where the putters set them to bank. The toil is ceaseless. A race to fill the tubs. Fill the tubs. We call the mind a knack, the nicky knack. From the clack of a mill, the teeth of one set of wheels biting into another. The windmill. Turning in the fresh breeze of the fresh air way above us. Knack, nicky knack, nicky knack. Knack, nicky knack, nicky knack.
Wind it away, Kate Tornin. The back shift men are gone on the M. They'll be back here in the morning.
Working underground in the mine, middle of the night, the caller knocks to wake the first shifts at every door, marked with a number one and white chalk.
Thomas, innit? You're awake.
Aye.
What's wrong?
I cannot rightly say. It's where I'm working at present. It feels that vulnerable. I've a mind not to go, but
if you feel
I
so...
I think we cannot manage if I do not.
I don't know what to say.
I'll fix us me breakfast. I'll put me duds on.
We can manage.
It'll pass. It'll pass.
What do you fear most underground? Fall of stone to trap you in, smash your legs, your back. To finish your working days. All your days. Gas. The carbonic gas lurking in the old workings, the gulf where the coal has been won. That gas has a reek like none other. It could be the devil breathing sulphur. It's pitch dark and dim light, so you've got to squint. Coal dust. Stone dust rasping at your throat and eyes. You're bowed over, hewing the coal, dragging and heaving it away out 12 hours at full stretch. With a few minutes they grudge you to bolt your food. That scares the time when the bosses, the nobility, aren't kneeling at your back. Come on, me canny man, you can fill more tubs than him. Swing that pick or there's more money. Setting men off against each other to crank up their profits. Well, you're slavery, man, slavery. And the only way to live with the fear is to hate the mine you're in bond to, hate and resent the pit. It gives you all, and it can take it all back, and you with it.
Where's Joseph Bradley?
Not here. Must have slipped the collar. He'll be turned over like a dumpling, because he's bred pleasant dreams.
And no tokens and no pay. I'll tell you what it is, man. I didn't know who the fellow was that invented sleep. If it hadn't have been invented, I could have found it too.
Hey, lad, that's a good getter up. When I wakened this morning, I was sound asleep.
Bend away!
Mainly, man, I was gone to walk. We met with a devil, it wasn't a dark. I hope when we picked, it wasn't a neat. I knocked off his horns, likewise it could be so hard.
With four big steams at the knock, from the surface, what we called the bank. Some of them reach out a mile, 2 miles and by. That is, underground, way out, under the sea, to the faces. The deepest is 300 fathoms. A fathom is fingertip to fingertip of both arms spread wide. a man's height. And a deal higher than a lot of the places where we stoop a lie to work. Some of them so low even the rats go bow-legged.
Put the way, man.
Right?
Yes, sir.
Let me see you ride those tubs down the wagon way. Be sharp now. Ride the tubs. Are you deaf? Turn your lamp up. Maybe you'll hear better. Ride the tubs. Mind, no, if I get killed, they needn't blame me.
As me and me Mara was loading the tram, the light that went out and me Mara went grand. You would have laughed at such a fine gal. Old Nick got me Mara and I got the tram.
What's wrong, Mara?
Oh, it's been bad. It's no good. I feel proper queer. It happened since I came down last night. I can hardly lift my hand. Oh, I'm going to have to go back to bank.
Sit down a while.
No, I'll do no good here. I'll get a bit of rest on the way out if I need it.
Mind where you go now.
Aye.
Now here is a simmer and here is a tram. So horns full of grief will mark it again. There's me Morris dressed suit on the groom. You can tear up his shark because his mind is all done.
What's this, man? Listen, get yourself awake. What's going on?
What?
You know what time it is.
Jeez, I don't know what day it is.
You're taking a holiday.
Oh, I feel bad.
Well, make up your mind. Bang out or get a walk.
Walk? I can hardly walk.
I'll get the bank then out the way. Right at the bank.
Why, my canny man, what's wrong? Are you?
Oh, I am very poorly.
I thought so. You look white.
I look white. I feel white.
Oh, the line's fired.
What?
The pit's fired. There's been an explosion.
I was working some time past 2 o'clock in the morning, I think, by the noise of the explosion. I got up to look out of the window. There was a dense cloud of smoke over the shaft of the pit. I threw on my clothes and dashed out into the street. The air was laden with soot flakes. Ground was half covered in them. I said it could be heard a mile out to sea. Oh, my poor Thomas. I ran to the mine with all the women, the alarm whistle caterwauling across the night.
The pit's fired.
What? You sure?
Feel a rush of warm air like a bath.
Fire?
No, it's blown, man.
What do we do?
Make for the shaft. Come on.
Gentlemen, I have to tell you that both shafts are blocked. Moreover, the cage guide wires have snapped and both cages are lodged across some way down. That, at any rate, is what we can so far observe. Who knows what other damage there is yet. We must start clearing the wreckage. Mr. Robson.
Sir.
Muster as many men as you possibly can.
There'll be no want of volunteers, Mr. Stratton. They'll all come.
We will need help from other pits nearby.
Right, Mr. Stratton.
They'll all come. They won't need to be asked.
How many men are there in by?
Well, calculation, 240 lamps were given up.
I see. By any means we can.
Durham Chronicle, CM Colliery, 5 a.m, September 9th, 1880. After anxious exertions, one of the shafts was so far cleared that explorers were able to descend in loops of rope. These gentlemen communicated from in-by to those at bank the joyful news that...
There are 19 men, at any rate, safe in the main seam.
I think the reading public will need more than that.
As manager of the colliery, I can state that not so large a number descended as lamps were given out. Perhaps 200. In the meantime, engineers are rigging a cradle so that we can go down and instigate rescue operations. Now, if you'll excuse me...
Mind the lamp now. As long as it burns steady, we're all right.
Lord have mercy. Do you hear? Do you hear that?
It was now.
Quiet. Listen. Joan. Joan and this lad.
What time is it?
5 o'clock. 10 minutes past.
Oh, Lord Jesus.
This is our big job for the young'un. I think we need the old man.
I'll warn him on board.
You mustn't give up hope.
I'm not. Just your name's on the board.
Here's some chalk.
Get it here. John Riley.
Dear God, who can see us all?
John,
see us here in this terrible dark.
Jacob Fletcher.
Hold out your redeeming hand to comfort us. Give us your light in our hour of woe. Amen.
Can you smell it? Try to pick again.
No one there.
Down, down. Listen.
The flame's going.
Riley.
Joe, Joe, and listen, lad, you'll hear that cold face walking. There's many a mother missing, lad, because he wouldn't listen, lad.
Durham Chronicle. 12 hours after the explosion, a crowd of some 20,000 people have gathered at the pithead, many of them visitors who had come to see him for the flower show that's being held this afternoon. Latest reports indicate that the shaft is blocked about 2 fathoms above Hutton Seam. The stifling atmosphere of soot and dust renders exploration work exceedingly arduous and not a little hazardous.
Good mother, I've never seen the light. How are we going to get through this at the old ship?
Terrible man.
Who's there? Who is it? Who's that? Where are you?
Here, over here. The lamp smashed.
What's your name?
Dixon. George.
Hi. I can just see you now. Are you all right, George?
Hi. Is that Mr. Beers?
Hi. Two of us.
Oh, I'm glad you've come.
Tom Noble as well. Yeah. Are you injured? Can you move?
No, I can move.
Can you get over to us here?
I have a boy here.
What?
I have a boy here. He's trapped in Baz's legs.
Is he alive?
He's knocked out, unconscious, under the skin.
Can you not move him?
How can I move him? No, I can't. I have hold of him.
Who is he?
Robson Lawson.
Robson?
Robson Lawson. He's now but 14 years old.
Oh, God. Now, George, if you try and come across here...
I'll not leave him.
Listen!
I'll not leave him.
Stubborn bugger, you stitching. Listen, George. Just try and get across here. We'll do our best to get him out.
I can't, Mr. Noble.
You're in no state to get him clear, man.
I won't leave him. I won't.
You can do him no good. We might have a better chance.
I can stay with him. Give him a bit of comfort.
It's deep peril you're in. George, do you hear me? It's deep peril you're in, both of you.
I think I didn't know.
What do you say?
You think I give it now?
Come on, man, give us a chance.
No, I'll not leave him alone. Don't hear. Do the best you can, eh? He's a canny wee lad.
We'll do our best. Can you hold on?
We'll be here.
Come on, Tom.
Oh, yow, and listen, lad. You'll hear that whole place walking. There's many a mother missing, lad, because he wouldn't listen, lad.
George!
Aye?
Listen, George, it's too big a fall for us. We're done in. We're going to have to go back to Bank to fetch more help. There's no possibility we can shift all this.
Aye.
We cannot get to the lad without fresh men, sharp picks.
No.
There may be gas about.
Aye.
Will you not at least save yourself? We'll be back.
Aye.
We'll be back, George.
Mr. Pigs.
Never worry, canny lad. I'm here.
The debody crowds from flat to flat, the putter and the tumen, and the man at the face must know his place, like a mother knows her young'un.
Durham Chronicle. At 1:30 in the afternoon, 3 men were brought to bank in the kibble that they used to haul the coal up, the first to see the light of day since the explosion. Alexander Kent, Ralph Marley...
Dismally, how did you know what happened?
About 2:20, we heard a shock, then a blast of air that blew our lamps out. One of the others said, "That's a ringer," meaning the shot fired. Well, I didn't think so. I said, "No, the pit's fired." He made off. I shouted after him, "Don't leave me, lad." And he came back.
Right.
Came back for his jacket. We set off for the stable up to the shaft, the Lincoln Tunnel, about 1/4 mile off. I cannot tell how long we were getting to it. There were massive falls every bit of the way. We got there in the end, it was completely blocked with smashed brass and other rubbish. We think the cage jammed up and all the broken stuff. And there was a smell like frying bacon. We found Robert. Robert Wardell. Under a great avalanche of stone and out with blood and clots and mud and filth about his head. He was part insensible moaning. Still, we got him to the foot of the shaft. We passed 3 dead bodies, but I couldn't tell you who they were.
Make way, please. Make way. Little trouble. Thank you.
At 10:00 this evening, 3 more men were brought to the surface alive, in great distress, and temporarily blinded from the deadly effects of the chalk damp formed when the carbonic gas drawn up in the explosion mingles with the dust and smoke generated by the blast.
When will they bring us news of our men? What news will they bring?
It's coming on to rain. There'll be no more news tonight.
The might, I can't gun him.
Him? Doesn't feel like him.
Every time I hear the chain bend up, my heart goes into my throat. Where's the owners?
Looking after their own.
There's a little other we can do but wait. Make food for the rescue party. Put lengths of flannel and canvas to wrap the bodies in. Wondering if it may be our man in them next. Give comfort to the children out of near comfort at all. To keep a queer semblance of normality. And wait. It's the hardest thing to wait and do now. With no companion but a terrible dread.
We've explored about 1/2 mile into the workings of the Morden Seam. It was an appalling sight we saw. It must have been 100 bodies, men and boys, part buried in the debris, fearfully mutilated. It would be nigh impossible to tell who they are, even one bit of body from another. Human remains from what they're buried in. In one of the ways we came upon 15 men huddled together, some on their backs, others on their sides. Several kneeling with their faces close to the earth. Just suck any clean air. They all had the lamps tight clenched in their hands or underneath them. One of them lay against the coal seam with his head. Flaxen hair resting on his jacket, folded like a pillow. It looked so natural.
That's the stithe. The gas. It steals on you. I tried to rescue one of the men. Doubt he was overcome by foul air. Got him into my arms and short way along before I realised he was dead. Had to leave him lying to get a way out. I've survived 2 explosions and now this one. And one time, I got drowsy. I coolly lay down. I didn't care about tomorrow. Any time, I just went to sleep. I never would have woken up if the explorers had not pulled me up.
We found a bit of brattice board with 2 messages written on in chalk. The Lord has been with us. We are all ready for heaven. Rip call, 2:30 Thursday. 12 or 24 hours after the explosion. Then a bit faint. Bless the Lord, we have had a jolly prayer meeting. Every man ready for glory. Praise the Lord. Our call.
There is something in the human heart that must always admire courage wherever it is found. Many a battlefield numbers fewer dead than attends this explosion, and he must have lost his humanity who can hear such tidings without a pang, or who forgets the value which the Bible has stamped upon a single human life. For God, who is father of the fatherless, husband of the widow.
Durham Chronicle, Friday the 10th of September. Twilight has passed into night. 40 hours have passed since the explosion. Two or three gas lamps glow around the pit's mouth. Here are stationed the relays of leather-capped miners, not from Seaham only, but all parts of County Durham, ready to relieve the men down the shaft. Leading the rescue operations in the mine from which he scarcely emerged is Mr. Stratton, the manager, haggard, soot begrimed and drenched to the skin, yet full of resource, and always ready to impart to us what news he can.
How many men do you estimate?
Gentlemen, please. I will give you as full a picture as I'm able.
How many men do you estimate still to be alive?
And I will endeavour to answer any questions in due time. It is now 40 hours since the explosion. 231 men and boys are known to have been in Bai. Altogether, 67 have been rescued alive.
How many more?
There remain 164 yet unaccounted.
Explorers
have made their way as far as they can into the Hutton seam. The number one shaft is still blocked with an estimated 35 fathoms of wreckage in the downcast near Hutton. And the upcast is impassable from the intense heat and a great volume of smoke and dust rising continuously from it. The Magdalen seam is in a very bad state. There are, we know, 25 bodies.
How many?
25. But there are none can be got out yet.
Why not?
Well, the roof, being softer than elsewhere, has given way and is in a very dangerous condition. It makes it impossible to travel any distance. In addition, there is the stench of human remains and dead horses. The work of exploration, of repair and clearance of the ruined structure of the mine will be continued around the clock.
Is there anyone still alive?
You may safely say there is not a living man, boy or horse in the pit except those who are going down to explore. I will answer your questions now.
How soon will the shaft be cleared?
It is impossible to say with any certainty, however.
We found George Dixon this morning, early, with his lad Robson, the little fella clasped tight in his arms. Both dead.
George, you have no need to stay. Stubborn George. My stubborn pucker.
They found the pit cat alive in one of the stables, terribly distressed, its eyes staring out of its head. The second explosion the poor thing has gone through. And a mouse. I suppose it was living in the fodder store with him by. You couldn't imagine any living thing could have survived. But the mouse must have come through part of the mine, which they say is impassable to a breathing creature. There's a lullaby we sing to get the bairns asleep. I saw a mouse run up the wall. Pit lie idle, pit lie idle. Saw its tail and that was all. Pit lie idle, pit lie idle. We say the pit lies idle when it's not working, like now. And the men and boys all asleep down there. Oh, my poor husband. My poor bairns. I saw a mouse run up the wall. Pit lie idle. Pit lie idle.
We found William Morris with a note fastened by a pin to his jacket collar written in pencil from a notebook. 8980. E. Hall and J. Lonsdale died at 3:30 in the morning. W. Murray and W. Morris and James Clark visited the rest at 9:30 in the morning and all living in the incline. Yours truly, W. Murray, Master Shifter. Identification is difficult and grisly most of the time, so many of the bodies are so badly knocked about. A patch of clothing if there's aught left, and not scorched black. A peculiar pattern of boot nails, a watch, tobacco tin. We found a note in one. Riley is lost. And things scattered about, purse full of chamomile flowers, piece of licorice, wicking pipe. They're using liberal quantities of lime and disinfectant to purge the dead bodies, but the stench is insufferable. Hardened men cannot stand it.
The Times, London, September the 14th, 1880. Amongst the bodies of victims so far recovered in the Seaham Colliery explosion has been identified that of Corporal Thomas Hineson, a member of the Siam Volunteer Artillery Brigade, who only this month past returned a hero to the town, having won the Queen's Prize for shooting in the National Artillery Competition at Shoeburyness. The poor man was literally blown to pieces by the explosion.
He said he'd had a bad feeling about where he was working. That if there was an explosion, he...
His body lay against the wall like a bundle of old canvas. The others had passed it a dozen times. Had lost an arm, both legs, part of his head and face. The only way I recognised him was from the Imperial, you know? Tuft of hair he wore under his lip. 39-year-old. One of his daughters was just due to be wed.
He said the feeling would pass. He won a gold cup. The Marquis was to have presented him with it that afternoon at the flower show. There's lots of the Pittman keen gardeners. They offered him £28 if he would sell the cup, but he said he would keep it as long as he was able to earn a crust of bread. If ever he parted with it, it would be for real pure necessity.
It is reported that Corporal Heinzen's widow has been offered £28.10 for the cup by the Marquis of Londonderry, owner of CM Colliery, and it is thought that she will be induced to part with it for this amount.
On yon bottle bank stood a lad and a lassie. Geordie's his name, as you'll understand. He's going to fight for his king and his country, with a sword in his teeth and a brick in each hand.
All right, Denny, take your time.
My cup. Oh, we cut him round.
Right, Cass.
What's that? What's that he's holding there? His bottle, it's his bottle. Let me keep it, please.
It's writing scratched on it. Dear Margaret, there was 40 of us all together at 7 a.m. Some were singing hymns, but my thoughts were on my little Michael. That him and I would meet in
heaven.
Oh yeah. At the same time. Oh, dear wife, God save you and the children, and pray for me. Dear wife, farewell. My last thoughts are about you and the children. Be sure and learn the children to pray for me. Oh, what an awful position we are in.
Two funerals to pay for in one day. Where's the kindness in that? Where's the kindness in that?
To the Mayor of Sunderland, dear sir, will you kindly receive 1 guinea for the widow of Michael Smith and the memory of little Michael, who died the very same afternoon as his father. This affecting incident of the explosion seems to have gone to the heart of everyone.
To the editor of the Times, sir, with reference to the letter inscribed on a tin bottle printed in your edition of October the 1st, the conduct of this poor man about to meet the unsparing hand exhibits a heroism which many of us may well envy. His allusion to a moribund child is very touching. As a director of a large industrial concern in South Wales, I am not unacquainted with miners, and it is pleasant to know that notwithstanding the influence of trade unions and drink, there are to be found among them such men as Smith. Yours faithfully, Joseph Sebag, Westmont Terrace, Hyde Park.
With indulgence, it is now the 24th day after the explosion. Some 130 bodies have so far been recovered, and 34 remain. I have now to report that, with great reluctance, I have ordered the maudlin seam to be stopped up. A fire is burning in the seam despite all efforts to extinguish it, and is now placing the whole mine in peril.
The repeat is down.
Bricklayers and masons will descend to build a stopping wall across the entrance until the fire has burned itself out.
That means, then, that you're giving up on those people?
The names of those believed to be in the maudlin seam are as follows. Nathaniel Brown, 20, Hewer, single. John Copeman, 32, stoneman, leaves a widow, no children. Joseph Cowie, 40, chalk drawer. Yes, Cowie. Chalk drawer, leaves a widow and 5 children. William Crossman, 18, putter, single.
Thomas Cunningham, 71, shifter, leaves a widow. Henry Ellsberg, 70, deputy, leaves a widow. Thomas Foster, 64, shifter, leaves a widow and one child. John Gray, 51, hewer, leaves a widow. William Henderson, 19, putter, single.
By stopping the Maudlin seam, they have effectively doomed all the men and boys so far unrecovered, whether living or dead, to remain entombed.
The pulley wheels are still. There's no steam as there usually is. It's so very melancholy.
Will they bring me down the cart when they come in a box? Amy, now, will be so pleased to see him. He's been away for such a long, long time.
Death hits us so hard. It robs us of our men, our bairns of their father, and it empties our pockets and purses into the bargain. The colliery owners put money into the relief fund, but they have deep pockets. Does not hurt them. And they stay away. Till the dust has settled.
They buried Simpson the day, alongside his wee bairn, 18 months old.
Back underground for good. Like the canny men in the Maudlin.
They're all dead by now, man. They must be.
Well, we see them lying, dude. We canna know. It's to save the mine they've stopped the seam.
If the whole pit goes, what then? We're tied to a body and soul, man.
The Marquess was in Durham yesterday.
Lord Londonderry.
Lord Fire Damp.
Lord High and Mighty.
He installed him Grand Master of the Masons.
Why, he's no better than a bricklayer. How can he be a Master Mason?
It's all out with the accident. He must have lost a power of money. So the chaps have taken pity on him.
What's to stop him being a Master Shifter or an Overman?
An Explorer.
Hey, man. He'll be trying to walk among the stamina for long.
Who yen comes down in the world nowadays?
London Illustrated News. It is satisfactory to learn that nearly all the men killed were insured in the Northumberland and Durham Miners Association, which grants 5 shillings a week to each widow and 2 shillings a week for each child. Money from a relief fund will be released as soon as possible.
You can ask them to come in now. Well, I think we should
very well. Ladies, do sit down. We have waived your application for increased grant from the relief fund.
It's not much we're asking, and the money is there, we believe.
That is, if you will forgive me, not the issue.
What is the issue?
If you will allow me, we took pains to discuss the matter at considerable length, and my committee and I agree that in balancing ultimate needs against current needs, we must, in due consideration for all beneficiaries, inform you that the existing arrangements cannot at present be altered.
But we cannot live on a shilling, sir.
I am sorry.
And a shilling rent if we lose our houses.
There it is.
And threatens to send the bairns to school. How can we? 2 and 9 a week, each child.
Well, we are bound by the terms of the relief fund.
Well, we would like to know what the terms are if it's us they're supposed to be assisting. Because they're not.
The existing arrangements cannot at present be altered.
We've a right to know. We did not choose to have to ask on charity. The vicar has spoken against it.
I am sorry, truly.
Is that your last word?
It is.
Why then, so are we. Sorry.
Durham Chronicle, October 30th, 1880. Yesterday, upwards of 80 men and boys resumed work in the Hutton Seam of Siam Colliery.
The minister said, death has had his crop. The fields have been left fallow to grieve the sickle a while, and now they're ploughed again for a fresh harvest. Pit lie idle, pit lie idle. If the pit lies idle, the community dies. Slowly. And all the deaths it has borne are wasted. Not only the deaths, but the sacrifice of the rescuers and the women, who bear no small part of the tragedy, this and others. Theirs is a selfless devotion, nothing short of heroic, for which no medals are won and scarce even a remark passed. It's a heroism they take for granted, but so do others who were never called on to show it. We leave questions to others. An inquest, officially. More a government inquiry. Good may come of it. And in the time they have of asking and deliberating and scratching their brows, we must be filling tubs. Come on, man. You can feel more than him. Swing that pick now. Swing that pick.
The official inquiry has recently witnessed a battle of the lamps. The comparative efficiency and safety of three differing types of lamp in use at Seaham has been highlighted by Mr. Jones, counsel for the miners, and for the government, Mr. Wright. But it is the part that may have been played by the coal dust which now dominates the proceedings.
Are all the lamps examined by deputies, Mr. Stratton?
No, only those in use.
Why not all?
Because it is not convenient, sir.
Convenient? What has that to do with it?
There are other men employed to examine them.
Now, could you tell me shortly, did you come to any conclusion that there was danger from the coal dust in a mine like this?
No, I did not.
Not even if shots were fired?
Not even if shots were fired.
I suppose you would admit, if I may use the word without offence, that the coal dust would intensify the effects of explosion of gas.
Well, there is no doubt that the coal dust is a very active agent in the case of an actual explosion.
Have you taken any samples of the dust that was left in the mine after the explosion?
No.
Any time in the day before the accident, you could have picked up bushels of it, could you not?
Well, I do not know. I mean, the dust in the form of dust is bad to collect. The dust lies in such very imperceptible thickness that it is a difficult matter to separate the dust from the rubbish.
Well, there is so much of it, you have to water it in place.
We water the ways, but it is not all coal dust, you must understand.
I did not say it was, Mr. Stratton. Mr. Foreman, you oversee firing of shots in the mine. What is the system of firing you employed?
We call it shot firing, sir. You insert the shot in a cone and ignite it with fire and touch paper.
Did they tamp them with coal dust?
Never. Not that I'm aware of.
What did they tamp them with?
It's simply whetstone and dirt.
As to the dust in the proximity of a shot, might there not exist special difficulties in the way of watering or laying coal dust by moisture?
I think there is some strength in the observation as to the floor of the mine if it's affected by water.
That is not my question. I quite understand that. But is there any practical difficulty in the way of watering in the immediate proximity of a shot?
There's only the question of a little expense.
The expense of a watering pot?
That's the only difficulty I can see.
Mr. Harrison, you appear on behalf of the Durham Miners Association.
I do.
You're a miner of long experience. Is the coal dust cleared every day in Seaham Colliery?
In places.
I have heard that measures are taken to remove it as it accumulates. Do you know how often it is sent to bank?
No, it's not part of my duty.
As Master Stoneman?
Yes.
But it is sent to bank?
Yes, occasionally. They keep clearing it out and wheeling it away at the week's end.
Have you ever known the coal dust put away in the refuge holes?
Not that I can recollect.
Mr. Stratton, supposing you were still in management at the mine, should you think it desirable to alter it?
Well, it would be desirable to have it cleaned up.
Supposing there were an Act of Parliament to say you must have another shaft under the circumstances, would it, as a matter of fact, have enabled men to escape?
I should say not. We have two shafts there now. The explosion originated in one pit and extended to another one, and we find that the men were lost in all the workings.
The mere addition of a shaft would not have enabled them to escape?
No, because the intake's becoming foul. The men are poisoned.
Take the case of the Magdalen, where you know men were alive for some time after.
I do not think it would have made any difference.
Why? If they were alive 24 hours after?
The intakes become poisoned. The air becomes unfit to respire, no matter where they are. If that air gets to them, they are killed.
You are acquainted with the effects of carbonic oxide.
I'm glad to say I am not.
Were there not symptoms of carbonic oxide about some part of the mine while you were down examining it? Shortly after the explosion?
I could not say. You could not tell much.
Did you notice during the explorations that the heads or spirits of any of your party seemed affected?
Well, I can speak for myself.
You will quite understand me. I am not making any foolish joke.
Oh, no, I was going to tell you. Most of the exploration done in the afterdamp, I may say without boasting, was done by myself.
Mr. Stratton, did you and the volunteers do everything in your power to save the lives of the men below?
We did.
Mr. Coroner, if it will save trouble, we shall all express the conviction that Mr. Stratton did everything that skill and devotion could possibly suggest.
Jowl, jowl, and listen, lad. You hear that poor face walking. There's many a man missing, lad, because he wasn't listening, lad.
Well, gentlemen, have you agreed upon your verdict?
We have, sir.
We have come to the conclusion that an explosion took place causing the deaths of Thomas Heinzen and others at Seam Colliery on September 8, 1880. But as to the seat of that explosion, we have been unable to determine. As to the other questions of the firing of shots and the clearing away of coal dust, we think that may safely be left in the hands of the colliery managers. Thank you.
Before my learned friend addresses us on that, I should like to say, as representative of the miners, one word upon a question upon which there is a great deal of feeling, and that is with regard to the unstopping of the Magdalen seam. Of course, upon the opening of that seam, there will have to be a fresh inquest. Now, of course, I hope it will not be understood in any way to reflect upon the conduct in this matter of the engineers who have undertaken the responsibility of deciding when it should be opened. But at the same time, I am sure they will appreciate the strong feeling there is, not of the men only, but on the part of the public generally, that as soon as possible the bodies which are in the pit should be recovered and given a decent burial. I do not suppose that I can do more than ask for assurance.
It was management who brought the stoppings at the Magdalen seam a whole year after the explosion, and the story filtered through that they found bodies of men just the other side of the wall.
He breaketh open a shaft away from where men, Sir John. They are forgotten of the foot that passeth by. Remember before God the Durham miners who have given their lives in the pits of this county, and all those who work in darkness and danger in those pits today.
And when that awful day arrives, the last shift for me, Father, a fall of stones and broken bones, but still above the clutter, he cried, "Rabbit about me, carry lad. Windily slow, that clever, this poor old lad has taken bad, he'll be back here never."
Bert and the coroner, Nigel Anthony. Reporter and Fletcher, Paul Copley. Cummings and Drainer, Tim Stone. Fife and Counsel for the Government, Geoffrey Andrews. Heinzen and Hutchinson, Peter Gunn. Malley and Chairman of the Relief Fund Committee, Jeff Lawson. Riley and Mr. Foreman, Michael Cookson. Robson and Counsel for the Miners, David Lerner. Stratton, John Fleming. Carroll and Harrison, John Hollis. Mrs. Heinzen, Cyril Jenkins. Mrs. Stokoe, Sheila Tate. Mrs. Dixon and Mrs. Lawson, Margaret Heary. Young boy, Christopher Whittaker. Radio 4 would like to thank the congregation of Seam Church. A Misfortune at Seam was written by Graham Fife and directed by Martin Jenkins.